Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. That's Wes Montgomery playing in the background. Actually, he's playing with Voyager, the name of that song. Wes stands with Voyager on the Atlantis Rising album. Nice of him to drop in like that. Actually, Wes Montgomery was an acquaintance of mine through Leo Fender, and I loved his style, and I copied it on a synthesizer. It's not even a guitar. It's actually a synthesizer sound that I made up on a Roland D50 based on his work. And I think the second time is charm tonight, because I actually put this show together earlier and then I realized my tape recorder didn't work, so I worked almost an hour and a half for nothing. Actually, it takes about 2.5 hours to do an hour and a half show. So that was kind of fun. And then I called up Don and swore at him a little bit and came back down here at 2 o'clock in the morning now and worked till dawn getting this show together for Tuesday night, because the show must go on, as we say. I want you to know that we'll be doing a lot of exciting, very exciting Saturday night shows very soon. I'm going to have some really cool guests, people that you've seen on the news and heard about, just people you know, some of them, and you'd be surprised what people you know, you'd never have realized what they really can do behind the scenes, Dr. Fred and the world. So we're going to have some fun with that. Tonight's show, the first one, is about, it's a continuation of some of the earlier shows we've had up in the previous weeks, where I'm talking about the Pleiadians. We're actually going to hear a Pleiadian ship sound tonight. Somewhere in my archives, I actually have a Ranticulan ship that I recorded too. Billy Myers recorded this ship, I recorded the Ranticulan ship. You're going to really enjoy this material though, it's really hot. When I was working with it earlier, my first doing Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, Energy Show earlier, listened to this stuff, and I was amazed. This was back in the, took me back. This is about how spaceships work and about things about Pleiadian society, and it's some cool stuff. And it shows you the background of where these people are really coming from. So I'm going to phase the music down a little bit more, and I'm going to get Jim on the phone here over at KFOX. Gonna dial him up on a 20-year back dial-up thing that I have here. So it all works pretty well once I figure out how to run all this stuff once again. He'll be coming right up. I know he will, because he's always there. And where is Jim? Jim, where are you anyway? Wait, I know you're coming.
Well, then she says,
there he is.
Spirit,
so we're just starting out now. The earlier part of this show was on one of the earlier shows that I did a week or two ago.
Not only in 1,008 different civilizations, but all civilizations.
The second part tonight will be a lecture I did in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So we'll announce it at the time right comes.
To gain the essence of its message. Space separates the various times
This is a quotation from Sunyasi, by the way.
Men, demigods, archetypes, ancients of the days, grandmans of the heavens, and so on. So she's really defining in a paragraph there the whole story of life. she's explaining that what Shiva and Shakti, which is a Tibetan interplay between male and female energies throughout the universe, the divine drama that goes on between men and women, and that's played out in all civilizations, and that, and the essence of that is basically life, and she's saying that the higher the consciousness, the different the time periods, and these time periods then break down in individualization such as gods, you know, like the ancients worship the gods or humans or whatever level that we go to. So she's saying all this in a paragraph. And then she says the higher the intellect, this is the killer thing here, you know, the higher the intellect, the greater the rationale of the acceptance that we are all of one God. Intellect is not a sign of genius. Genius, not properly applied to proper space-time expression, however, breeds intellect. Intellect locks the brain to mind patterns, and the logic of the mental plane traps the individual into Maya, which is the universe, and he or she cannot remain space-born and are reborn onto Earth-type planes. Thus, so does the cycle of the karmic wheel receive its purpose and distribute its motion, ever holding creation in form. Now, I don't know, did you grasp that?
Easy as ABC.
Yeah, it's simple. I mean, you actually tell you what, that, right?
When she gave you that information, it just blew me away.
Paragraph,
I stood there on the hillside,
it.
And she's
intellect is not a sign of genius. Genius
black
not properly applied to proper space-time expression, however, breeds intellect.
That was one of the more profound things that she told me. Standing on a hillside here in Laguna, and this woman is telling me these things, and I'm writing them down as fast as I bloody could.
Was used in that paragraph, and that is Maya. That is a Hindu word. A word that is used in Hindu and has a number of different meanings. One of the meanings is dance, or to play the dance of life, really.
Right, which is what the dance of the Shiva, the Shakti dance for Shiva is all about. Because, you know, whether you have a pretty girl in your bedroom dancing for you, or whether you're in a nightclub watching one, or you're on a chorus line, it's the same thing that's going on, the fantasies that this dance portrays. And that whole dance depicts all of our patterns in life. Now, I personally feel that I'm sort of intelligent, but I am not capable of making statements like that because they're too simple. And I'm not intelligent enough. I haven't reached a level of intelligence yet where I can really simplify things. I find that the more intelligent, the more you understand things, the simpler you can explain things. And I have to talk 30 minutes 5 days a week, so obviously I'm still working on it, you know. One of these days I'll come on the... talk about the radio here, and I'll say one or two words, and that'll be it. You don't need to say any more; it'll all be said, right?
What are we going
to
do with the other 28 minutes, though?
I don't know. Here's a few of the things that Sannyasi had made statements to Billy Myers, because the way they speak is quite interesting in itself. It's kind of a musical language. He says, "A spiritually developing person is a noble artist of precious spirit, soft character, full of love, knowledge, wisdom, and logic. He is most sensible in the development of truth, beauty, and spiritual progress. His life is orderly, clarified, and above this, his perspectives are very extensive. His whole being is generous, and beauty expresses herself in the unpretentious life of spiritual dignity. His inner calm holds a beauty which no artist is able to capture on canvas, and no poet is able to describe in words. His tranquility exercises a force of attraction which even the most harmonious music cannot express. His self-assurance is unequaled, and his goals and aims hold no limitations. His wisdom is always present, light shining even into the darkest depths. It is not like the light of day which can be overcome by the darkness of light. His presence is always the incense of eternity, which never fades away, while the fragrance of the most beautiful rose and orchid pines away and disappears into the time of endlessness." This is one of the quotations that Sannyasi made. Another short one was, "One cannot clothe love into words, for love is the same as bliss, state without a place. It is imperishable and cannot be shaped or manipulated into what it is not." So there, when you listen to these people talk, and when you hear what they say, you begin to realize the tremendous depth of their wisdom. And I'll read a little bit of what she had told me, because I've had conversations. These are direct quotations out of Volume 2. Says, "The human may be very old on the exterior, but this is only a passing state. 50 years ago, he was not old, and 50 years from now, he will not be old, for only the physical body can age. The, st- spirit remains forever young and is never subjected to the appearance of age, for age is like youth, and every other experience is a passing state. The spirit's incarnation lessons focus on understanding and spreading knowledge, truth, and wisdom, love, and understanding. All forms of life have to accomplish their own evolutionary process. Thus, they collect experiences and knowledge to share and utilize their daily life. Wisdom is the light wherever the light flashes up, where darkness and ignorance disappear. Ignorance is the essential darkness and can only be overcome by the light of wisdom. Wisdom is the mark of existence of the spirit. Disguises itself in the qualities of truth, poise, knowledge, beauty, harmony, and peace. Wisdom is also the mark of the human who has recognized the existence of his spirit and works with it according to the creational laws, for wisdom and the spirit are two factors which react as one, much in the same way as sun and sunlight. Both give warmth and light. So I thought their statements are just very profound, very direct, and their lifestyle is quite different than ours. You got to realize, first of all, that the Pleiadians live a lot longer than we do. The average lifespan for one of them would be 800 or 900 of our years, and that Sannyasi is about 330 years old now, and looks like a person about, I'd say she looks like she's about 26 or 27. Those of you, if you can get hold of an older thing, when I was on the front page of the, I'm looking it up here in my file, on the front page of the National Examiner, if you call them up, it was done in August 31, 1982, but I think they'll photo produce articles, and it was the first time I was ever on the front page of one of these things with Brooke Shields. It was kind of cute. Anyway, on the National Examiner, August 31, 1982, there was a four-page article about this contact that I was having with Sannyasi at the time, and in it is a picture of what she looks like, and a picture is a drawing, but this is done from a police photograph over in Phoenix, and it's a pretty striking likeness, because I had a professional artist do it from the photograph. Photographs are not allowed to be reproduced with the Pleiadians because they are occasionally walking in our society today. There's one picture in volume 2 of one of her friends, because she's no longer walking the streets of the earth. Her name is Azket, which is one of Sannyasi's friends, and that is a photograph. But we found one thing: when you take pictures of these cosmonauts or astronauts, or whatever you want to call them, inside their ships, there's usually a kind of like a rainbow effect that goes in, because there's a force field in there that disturbs the way our cameras work slightly. Anyway, they live on a world. They live, first of all, in their planet. Our astronomers said that when they looked across the skies, they looked at the Pleiades, and one of them is a 4.5 magnitude star, and a constellational name for them is M45. I think it was designated that back in the early 1800s. And science thought for a long time that if it was possible for a race to develop star travel first, the Pleiades would be a good place to do it, because there are two suns there. They're double suns, and they're about one light year apart. So on some of the worlds back there, the sun, you'd see two suns in the heaven rather than one. Secondly, the heat of the sun that they're around, and it's that sun called Alcone, is about the same as our sun here, which is a young star, relatively small-sized star, which ours is, and they live on a planet which is about in the same position as the Earth. The planet that they come from is a planet called Era. And when a child over there is born, like the children of Earth are born, they don't use any chemicals to suppress pain, and they're never introduced, none of these things are ever introduced into the mother's body. And they have what is almost like a normal childbirth. But realize that because they live in perfect harmony, and when I say perfect harmony, we could do that here, first of all, if we could live with a harmony within our own natures, which we cannot do, because we have not. Secondly, you don't hear sirens going up and down the street. You don't go on a freeway and breathe truck exhaust. You don't have any of those forms of stress, which really accelerates the aging process. The buildings are circular. They all are self-sufficient. they have each building has a certain amount of land around it that they cultivate, because the working with plants and those kinds of things are what they're really into, and they consider that one way to be close to nature and therefore being close to God. So horticulture is a big thing with all of the Pleiadians. Secondly, they're not into a greed aspect where they're developing housing projects all over the place, building buildings. And by the way, they don't use square rooms in anything. We have found and run research on this planet in science and found that the worst shape that you can be inside of would be a rectangle or a square, because all forms of natural energy are broken into very disharmonious waveforms which affect our aura in a very negative way. And radiation, for example, is trapped. You know, square boxes and rectangular boxes or rooms trap radiation and cause standing waves, which interrogates our central nervous system. Just to say a few things about what it does, it also interferes with the meiotic cycle of cell reproduction. So this isn't good either. The best shape to live in is the pyramid, which the Egyptians had long ago proven. And if you look at some of Frank Lloyd Wright's work, he was very much in the pyramid, very famous architect on this planet. You'll see where he used the pyramid structure in many, many, many different buildings to break up the energy field. The sphere is another one, and the sphere, which is oftentimes into some of the things that Buckminster Fuller did, with the geodesic dome, where it's basically spherical in nature with the integration of a pyramid concept. This is the type of thing that some of the extraterrestrials use, including the shape of most of their spaceships is in that similar shape. Now, when they go to school on Era, which is spelled ERRA, they have a minimum age of 70 years of schooling. So they go to school for about 70 years. And I can kind of grasp the knowledge that's attainable during that time, because even in my own ignorant way of becoming a cosmic student, I've been going to school now for about 35 years of my own life, and in many schools, and studying constantly, and I'm just starting to realize that there's a whole lot more out there. I mean, of great, great orders of magnitude, and realize I haven't even got to nursery school yet. So at 70 years of schooling, this is a pretty good amount. And here, if you don't behave and you don't go to school, they have a truant officer that will make sure that you go to school, as they did when I went to school. There they have an obligation, which is overseen by what's called a high council. And once a child has gone through his basic 70 years of schooling, then he or she then goes on into whatever their career field is going to be. In Semyasi's case, she's one of these people that goes around different civilizations to act as a communicator. And she's very good at it. And her father and her brother also do the same things. Now, the Pleiadians got into, when Semyasi gave me the idea for the receptor, which was back about 1976, and we talk about the receptor, she was teaching me then about gene conditioning. And gene conditioning is one of the first things that our society will start to get into very soon. We're already getting into now in our life extension work. And this has to do with a sophisticated exchange where the genes regulate the cells, and the cells in turn regulate the regeneration and disintegration of the life form. And what happens is, with something like the receptor, it modifies the DNA frequencies to such a point where they begin to create new hormones in the body, whereby then you can have higher and higher expressions of energy, because all energy expressions, as we know it in our personality form, in our personality body, comes from the secretion of hormones, and the hormones then arrive at the receptor sites on the brain for a given period of time. While the receptor sites are being energized or de-energized on the brain pattern, what then happens is the consciousness moves up on the astral and etheric and mental planes, and this energy then regulates time. And when you regulate your own time slightly out of dimension with the Earth time, it separates you from the masses and gives you a real powerful form of individual creativity. Well, these are some of the kinds of things that I have been taught, and these are where, like, my second Christmas present from Semyasi, in 1981, was the development of a unit that we use with our pyramid structures that alters time slightly in consciousness when you go in front of it. It's quite an interesting little device. I have a few of them here. You see, when you accelerate the carbon atoms in hyperspeeds or beyond the speed of light, what happens is, first of all, the carbon atom is represented as an octahedron, okay? You know what that looks like, right? A pyramid with a pyramid top and a pyramid bottom.
An eight-sided form.
Closed form, right. When you accelerate the carbon atom in the body faster than the speed of light, the actual form collapses. As it goes towards the speed of light, it gets smaller as viewed from here on Earth, but it also changes form. You have to imagine, if you will, that the pyramid drops, it squashes on itself. The base of each pyramid falls towards the top pyramid falls inside of the bottom pyramid. The bottom pyramid falls inside of the top one. You follow that?
Yes.
It forms like the Star of David.
It starts to compress.
Right, but it also interpenetrates its own shape.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Yes.
Okay, so you end up, if you imagine one pyramid inside the other, if you look at it from the side, you see the Star of David. Okay?
Yes.
Because the base then would form, and so it forms the Star of David, and this is where the symbology of Star of David came from originally. Was this in the Jewish culture, it represented the transcendental consciousness of the nation. But it also came from a scientific term, because remember, at one time, science and religion were one. And what happens is, when this thing collapses towards the speed of light inside of itself, in four quadrants, in one of four corners of this structure, are formed two pyramids inverted, okay, in each corner. So eight more pyramids will form out of subatomic material in this particular geometric shape. And this is where the cubit, the design of this represents the cubit, because on the Great Pyramid there's four cornerstones around each pyramid. And, you know, on the Big Pyramid there's four major, what they call the cornerstones, that the whole entire structure is centered on and aligned to. Well, in interdimensional flight, what happens is this device collapses, and then the next and each succeeding dimension is attained, one of those four corners all of a sudden becomes the same structure as the original structure. It's like cosmic mitosis. And this structure then, as it goes into the next dimension, collapses on itself in one of the four corners, and it accelerates up, creates another one, each one smaller than the previous one, because as you accelerate energy, the finiteness in relation to the physical plane is quite a bit smaller. So theoretically, when these ships accelerate in these hyperspeeds, they're reduced down to energy, and because they finally reach a point of almost pure energy, and that's how they attain these really, you know, horrendous speeds across the universe in a matter of microseconds.
Well, Dr. Bell, what would the propulsion systems be to accelerate them up to the speed of light?
As Samyasa said, it's sound powered and light separated, when I asked him one time. Matter of fact, real quickly, let me just play when the Swiss Mirage jet scrambled for the flying saucer, and it got fire control systems. I have an audio recording here if you want to hear it, what it sounds like when it's hovering, and then I'll explain how it works.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, hang on. This is probably one of the only few tapes in the world. Let's see if I can get it going here. Here it is. I'll play it for about a minute, because you'll hear the ship move.
Yes, I did. Now, what were we listening to?
Okay, that was a ship, and what happened is, if I play a little bit further, just right after that happened, and during the recording, a jet is going to chase this thing, all right? And there's photographs, I got photos of it, a Swiss Mirage jet comes down on the ship while he's having a contact. The ship moves sideways. It was hovering, and as it began to move, you could hear the pitches changing, because when it's dead still is when it's loudest. As soon as they start to move, the sound, because of the compression of the force field that's around, the sound can no longer escape. The faster that they move, the quieter they become. So when they're in a dead still, and we have spectrum analyzers check out all of the different frequencies, and we know each frequency, that there are 12 different frequencies that they use, but it goes into one frequency. First of all, there was a 4.9 cycle pattern on it. Then there was a 4.6 cycle pattern on it, and a 5.0 cycle pattern. And Nikola Tesla had discovered a natural electromagnetic resonance of the Earth to be 6.6 cycles per second. Then another guy by the name of Schumann also discovered that a second resonance of the Earth was 7.8 cycles per second. Now, these are all natural resonances, and it was found to be interesting that the Pleiadian ships run on these things. So then they analyzed the tape some more, with a spectrum analyzer, and they found a 7.14 cycle harmonic, a 4.72 harmonic, and a 3.52 cycle harmonic. There were 12 different harmonics, and then there was a 1 kilohertz tone that existed throughout with that in each way it aligned all the other ones together. It was like the beat frequency that kept all of the other ones together, like, you know, like in a crystal. We work inside of the frequency counter. They use a main frequency for the crystal, and they use subharmonics to make different circuitry happen. And if the main crystal inside of the frequency counter, for example, goes bad, or a computer would go bad, because they use clocks and computers, if that one would go bad, then all these other harmonics that they're using for other circuits would also go bad. Well, Pleiadians use a 1 kilohertz signal as a 1,000 cycles per second vibration to stabilize these low-frequency sounds. Then there was this guy by the name of Steve Ambrose, and he was asked, he's an engineer for a major sound company, because they went to many sound companies that, you know, that work on this. And they said, well, could we go out and buy a bunch of, oscillators like these rock and roll stars do have and mix them together? And he said, his answer was that. He says, there are 100 different changes every 2 or 3 seconds on here. There are certainly aren't any synthesizers that have oscillators that are that many and that randomly tuned to that many random things, all changing simultaneously. That's not something inherent in any of the synthesizers that are used for professional recording or creating sound. This is something that has a tremendous amount of oscillation at different frequencies. So, let's see if I can get my tape recorder working here. Let me turn it on. And I'll play it. Play it once more. And you can actually hear it. You want me to play it for you, Jim?
Yes, go ahead.
Here you go. Pitch sound?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, now that, realize that at that point it's moving away. So it's moving away, so you get the ordinary change of the Doppler effect as it moves away. But that highest pitch that you heard is about 1,000 cycles per second. Then all that, this is a very inexpensive tape recorder, so these little mini cassettes that I'm using here. So you don't really get the true effect of it on the radio, plus we're going through the telephone line, that you do when you're around one of these ships. Well, when these ships come down in their larger landing ports, on Era, the buildings are acoustically designed so that the reflection of the sound waves coming off of the walls from the ship landing is like a musical sound, like an orchestra. Whereas here, if you go to LAX and watch a jet lander take off, it destroys your eardrums. Totally the opposite of what we know. Even flight in one of their ships is like a psychedelic color ride. I mean, it's incredible. Just being in one of these things. I personally have never ridden in one, but I've seen pictures of what it's like to ride in them. And Billy Myers has taken pictures from the inside of them looking out.
Since that time, however, that's me back again. We're going to switch tape over in a minute. But since that time, I have been in a ship and didn't go very far because I know what the effects are on the body, and they're not good because it's too much pure energy in a very harmonious form, and it almost destroys us afterwards as side effects. And Barney Hill, for example, died of cancer as a result of being inside of a Renticulan ship. And I don't really think that sometimes Billy Myers' health is all that good either from many rides he's had. So you see these kinds of things. Also, since that time, I had taken that sound apart and worked with synthesizers. The synthesizer technology came along, and we were able to use a Roland D50 to mix that sound into its data banks and create a offspring, a series of sounds that you hear in a lot of my music now. The X15 will use not only Pleiadian sounds in it with Schumann-type resonant points, but also we'll use a lot of Andromedan holographic sound, which we had. We never even got close to that yet. We were also very, very successful in using the sounds that we got from Sannyasi and doing some levitation here in the studio that I'm sitting in right now in front of witnesses. And that's, I think we could probably do that again. It talks about that in my book, Race of Truth, how that's done, how the Tibetans do it to lift rocks using rangoons and horns and different things, because they know how to hit certain resonance points, and it'll cause things to fly into the air, because it disconnects, actually disconnects the energy of the Earth's gravity through a particle inside the atomic structure called a lepton. And I'm going to turn this tape over here in a second, and you're going to hear some more. And one of these days, when I get out there and play music again, I'm going to be demonstrating some of this stuff. Usually when I play music, the ships do come anyway. In Germany, as we talked about it earlier in some of the earlier tapes, we have amazing experiences with ships coming when they hear the sounds of what we do, because it sort of calls to them, and it's their sounds anyway. So I'm going to get this other tape rolling here, see what then Dr. Bell kicks in any moment, and we'll continue on. I hope you're enjoying the show tonight. Like I said, we're going to have some really exciting shows coming up live on Saturday night, but these shows are a lot of fun, because I'm even re-remembering a lot of things I did, and oh boy, I tell you, I remember some of the things I was saying, and I have just recently had been on those hills out there, not far from where I live now, having these experiences with the Pleiadians and having these conversations. And some of the things that she used to tell me were very profound, and obviously that some of it's in my books and some of it ends up these tapes. Also, I want to notice that the healing thing that we're working on, the X1, is coming along rather quickly. We're going to be announcing that machine, and it'll be something doctors will probably be interested in. We can't call it a healing machine. We're going to call it a body alignment generator or something. It's like beyond anything in this world. Even when you see what this thing is, and I will have some pictures of it on the bbsradio.com picture section in my archives when the time is right. We'll put this in there and some of the samples, and maybe one of my seminars, which we'll even cover, maybe even the seminar in May, I might cover some of the things of how it works and what it is. They might even have a presentation of part of it by then. Hopefully, might even have a machine built, but that's pretty close. May is coming up pretty fast. And I'm just saying I had to do this show twice tonight. We're also looking forward to doing the 11 o'clock show, which is going to be a different kind of archive.
When Michael Pinder of the Moody Blues heard one over in Hawaii.
Yes, Michael Pinder was a...
He did a very good
spent a lot of time with him.
Duplication on one of his... album.
And here comes
this,
we're talking about the sound, continuation of the tape.
He did his synthesizer version of it, which was sort of, you got the feeling, but if you looked it up to one of the sound analysts, you wouldn't have heard all of that. Like it was heard, but at that time, considering where the sound equipment was, Mike, I considered to be a really good keyboard player and a person that could resynthesize to a musical tone the sounds of a ship. But he was probably one of the few people that I've ever heard, make a somewhat representation of the actual sound of one of these things. And I think on their album that was preceding that, he also made that sound. I forget the name of the album now.
Now, how did you get that recording?
This one came when Billy Myers and I were working together through Colonel Stevens. I asked Colonel Stevens, because this is the time
that album was called Threshold of a Dream.
Because I was working on the Time Machine.
That's called Threshold of a Dream. You'll hear one of the ships on that.
I made a trip out to Arizona, explained to Colonel Stevens that what I needed it for, and he felt that I had a right to need to know it, and so then he gave it to me. Now, on that recording is not only the sound of Kunyasi's ship, but there's also the sound of those Reticulan ships on it also in another point, but that's how I got it, basically. The Reticulans, by the way, were the ones that were in the Betty and Barney Hill case, and I have an actual soundtrack of the ship that took Betty and Barney Hill.
Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticulae.
Yeah, Beta 2, Zeta 1, right. They're 18 light years from here. And so, anyhow, that's how I got it, and we used it here for some sound analysis also, because we have the same equipment. Because when I got into that time machine that I built a few years ago, Zumiati was explaining how they use time in relationship to space. And so she says you must work with time before you work with space, because if you got lost in space and time, you'd have a tremendous, problem finding yourself or finding your way back. Getting back to the subject of the propulsion systems, these low frequencies that you hear can be duplicated on this planet, which I think the first systems will have, by fluids. They have two big rings of fluids, magnetic fluids, held in suspension. And these fluids are pumped in two different directions. Alan Holt has designed a system. Alan Holt is, like, I like to call him the new Wernher von Braun of space. And he's working at NASA right now. He's in charge of the propulsion systems over there, primarily with Skylab and some of these projects where the spacecraft are going up and re-entering again. And Alan wrote a report on it. It was sponsored by the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics and Society, and the Society of Automotive Engineers, the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, which is ASME, SAE, and AIAA, respectively. And the AIAA number was AIAA-80-1233, which is prospects for a breakthrough in field-dependent propulsion. And this was presented at a joint propulsion conference on July 30th and June 2nd, 1980, in Hartford, Connecticut. And those of you would want to get a copy of this propulsion system, they could write the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, 1290 Avenue of the Americas, New York, New York, 10019. This is a crude outline of a system similar to what is used in the Pleiadian ship. There are some drawings in it. It explains a little bit about how times work, the plasmas that are used. But primarily what they're doing is they're using in this system a superconducting magnet. And you just have to imagine that you had 12 lasers up in the center of a circle, each one pointing a beam out to an outer rim. And so it would be like a wagon wheel. So instead of the spoke in the wagon wheel, there'd be 12 spokes in this wagon wheel, and each one is a laser beam. And then around each spoke is a superconducting magnet. And they're all the way around, and the spokes themselves are hydromagnetic electron wave generators. And the outer structure is the ring, and it has two fluids in it, one going in one direction, one going in the other direction. So it's like this particular wheel is like the dual wheels on a truck. That in each wheel on the truck, for example, one of them is going to have a fluid in it that will go clockwise, and one of them will have a fluid in it that will go counterclockwise. And what happens is these fluids have magnetic properties embedded in them. And they begin to rotate in opposite directions by special pumps at a high rate of speed, which first of all gives them a gyroscopic effect, so that's like a gyro on the surface of the ship, and obviously the ship is going to be a disc. And then what happens is when the lasers come on, the plasma of the lasers is pitched down and sent out and superconducting, you know, through the superconducting magnets, and so this plasma is sent out and magnetically energizes the fluids in the outer rim, which are traveling at a fairly good rate of speed. Then what happens is these superconducting magnets begin to produce cyclic waves in the outer perimeter of the two disks. And so these cyclic waves begin to go in a clockwise and counterclockwise direction. They call them traveling waves. So you can imagine this third traveling clockwise wave going around inside these two different tires in the opposite direction. And these high fields begin to warp. They will actually begin to warp the gravity around them and the space around them. They begin to create gravity-like waves that are different from those on the Earth, and pretty soon the craft does not see the Earth anymore and begins to lift itself off. So we have, in our country today, the basic idea of the technology. The way the Pleiadians do it is not that way, but it's far more sophisticated, but that was a way that we could do it. And then the next thing that happens is you get a tremendous difference of charge, because if you've got two magnetic fluids going in opposite directions, you have what I would call a hydrodynamic Wimhurst machine. You're probably familiar with the Wimhurst wheel, right?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to.
The Wimhurst wheel, remember back in college or high school, it had looked like two records that would sit opposite one another up on a stand and crank it, and one record would go one way and one record would go the other, and you'd have it, next to these two records, you'd have a big circular chamber, I mean like a film canister sitting there, and then you have two balls coming off, and you get this big spark every once in a while. And it's an electrostatic generator that creates high voltage electricity by two surfaces moving in opposite directions with respect to one another. So you get a positive charge on one side and a negative charge on the other. Well, this is called a Wimhurst machine. The more sophisticated version of it was called a Van de Graaff generator, which I'm sure you've seen those.
Yes, I have.
That consists of a stand. Imagine a stand about the size of a cigar box, about a 5 foot long plastic tube going up from the top of the cigar box with a big circular metal ball on the top.
That'll make your hair stand on end.
Right, yeah, and then you stand on the glass plate, put your hand on the ball, and your hair stands straight up. They used to have those in circuses back years ago. And women with long hair, they'll go straight up. You know, a woman with 3 foot long hair is 3 foot straight up over her head. Well, that's the way the propulsion system works as far as the lateral movement in the air. It puts a high power charge on the ship, a negative charge on one, and a positive charge on the bottom side of the ship. So it, on one side, it's exactly like an electrostatic airfoil. It repels, it pushes away from air underneath it, and it attracts air molecules above it. And the faster that it moves through the air, the higher does the friction occur naturally. So it puts a negative ion charge on the air. It actually heals the atmosphere. It's a simple propulsion system, that aspect of it, and it will move the craft at a high rate of speed. I mean, it's just an absolutely incredible thing, and that's why you see these different colors, because it's the ionization that these things produce in the aurora borealis that I saw that time in that contact as the thing moves across space. And with the Pleiadian technology, for example, involving faster than light travel, you know, like when Semyazi took Billy Meyer up and showed him, the paradoxical type of life forms, meaning the old dinosaurs that would fly that existed back on the Earth some millions of years ago, it is almost as common to travel in time as it is to travel on our freeways for them.
Science fiction writers were writing about nuclear powered generators before there were rocket ships to the moon, hyperdrive. I mean, science fiction definitely leads to reality.
That's right. We create our own realities. All you have to do is try and believe. And if you believe, then you receive. You know, that's one of my favorite axioms. And it's true. That's exactly the way the universe works right now. And when I got in contact and became a contactee, the people taught me, one of the things that I had the hardest time developing, and Semyazi used to constantly, if you would use the term, bust me for, was the fact that I would always try to imagine more out of our conversations than what she was trying to teach me than was actually there. And she used to constantly insist that if I would just stop using my imagination at that moment and just feel the truth of our communication, that I would get greater rewards than beyond my imagination. So she began to teach me by centering on truth how to actually exceed the expectations of imagination. And that's the only way that I've been able to take what I would call, in the very beginning, a series of abstract demonstrations in a few witnesses and expound it into a science, which I feel that I've been successful in today, because now the things that I've been able to do in science, other New Age people are doing, not just a few hundred, but literally thousands of New Age people are using, like these chapters on Corellian photography are now monumental, and I've seen them in other books even that have been written in the New Age. And one lady up in Canada from this book started one of the largest practices of Corellian photography up there, and she has a lot of world famous scientists come into this huge clinic. It all started from in 1979 when she read, I think, page 152 to about 170 in my book, Death of Ignorance, which to me was great because, you know, it was just science that had been given to me that other people, it already had the ingredients. It's like, you know, you can bake a cake, but you need the recipe. You got everything on the shelf. Well, the recipe was there. I mean, the ingredients was there. So that she had to have this book. And when this book was done, then this whole huge practice is in this largest clinic up in Canada today as a result of that. It was only 5 years ago when she started. So this is what the Pleiadians were trying to do with me, and they were trying to do it with Billy Myers, and it can be discouraging because maybe out of 50 people that you embrace with this consciousness and this knowledge, 20 of them will condemn you for it, another 10 are probably disinterested, another 7 or 8 aren't capable of handling it, and maybe 1 out of 50 totally gets into it. But that one reward is merit enough for the entire study or dedication of this asset, you know, this fact.
If you would like more information about Dr. Bell or his products, please contact the New Age Science Association at area code 213-650-1200. Thank you, and God bless.
And that was the end of that tape. And now we will stop that one, and we're going to jump to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and this is a fun one. This is a good one. Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm doing a lecture over there. I have just been hanging out up there with Hickory Apaches right up the road. And so a lot been going on. And, of course, you're going to hear getting the audience settled in a little bit, you know. Call it settling the audience, you know. Audience have to be settled a little bit. So here we go into the next phase of Dr. Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. And it's coming right up. All right, let me get all the people together, Dr. Bell. Everybody there.
Guys enjoying the conference?
Ooh, that's a little loud there.
How many of you guys live around here anyway? Oh, a lot of local people, huh? How many came from far distant lands to be here?
Dr. Bell jumped in pretty hard on that.
Where'd
one.
Where'd you guys come from anyway? California, huh? Couldn't pass down an excuse to get away from good old Santa Fe, huh? Oh, yeah. Well, today I'm going to talk about, we don't have, you know, how long is this lecture for, 45 minutes or an hour? Half an hour? Oh, this is a quickie, huh? This is about, yeah, they don't kick me out. We'll have the workshop this afternoon. But how many of you guys have seen me lecture before in here anyway? Oh, good, a bunch of virgin people in here. They don't know me too well. Well, I've been in this business, the science business, since I was a kid, about 7 or 8 years old, University of Michigan, actually 9. And so I was involved with the government for a lot of years. I was in the Air Force. I worked for NASA. When I got out of NASA, I went with the Tibetan Masters and went through the whole New Age training program. In 1971, I became a contactee with the Pleiadian group. Brad Steiger wrote a book about me called The Fellowship that was published worldwide. And then talking about my science transmutation and the experiences with a female cosmonaut named Semyonti, which lasted almost 20 years. And then Brad and I wrote this book together, which is called The Promise. It's at our booth down there, which is the actual story of what was going on with my past life, because I had a past life in another country, and then I came here, and I was brought, I had a total consciousness. I didn't lose my consciousness from my past life, so it gave me kind of a jump start in science in this life. And as a result of that, I got involved with the secret government, which is out to do nothing more than destroy you, as I'm sure you can see. And you can see the presidency is pretty much a joke at this point in time. Because the consciousness of the people is starting to exceed the authority of the government, and I'm sure it's pretty obvious that the government, as you probably saw how badly the Waco incident was handled, you can see how stupid and how out of touch the government is in touch with higher consciousness, even whether it be negative or positive consciousness. Really doesn't matter. Consciousness is consciousness. I mean, Hitler could have blown away New Age exoteric people in a heartbeat with his exoteric, you know, knowledge that he had. And so, I mean, occultism was something that's been around. You can use it any way you want. You can use it to, you know, control minds. You can use it to, you know, inaugurate the second coming. And unfortunately, the whole program of the trilateral group and the secret government today is to orchestrate the second coming through the through Revelation. So it makes it appear as a Bible thing is happening. Those of you that live in this area, of course, you know that there's Los Alamos next door, and Dulce's up the road, which has been an underground base for a long time for extraterrestrials. You get to feel the energy quite frequently. I've made several trips into Dulce. We've done ultrasounding up there with scientific equipment. We lifted an entire area under there, as big as New York City, under the Indian reservation up there. I became really good friends with the Apaches. They've been very cooperative. We've had a great time up there. We've spent a lot of time in Area 51. And one of the things that we're approaching the Clinton administration with this year is, why do we have Area 51 science and technology in NASA? I mean, they want to cut the American budget down, you know, and really get some real spending back to the people. We got to get rid of about 25% of our defense budget, which is NASA, which is nothing more than a WPA project. I'm sure most of you know that. The NASA technology that we have, which is called state-of-the-art technology at NASA, was obsolete, you know, next to Area 51 back in the 60s. So it's a big waste of taxpayer money. In the Promise series, I have gone into this. I produced this tape series, which is 18 hours of different things including a videotape on the second volume, which has pictures of Area 51 on video and some of the spacecraft, the experimental stuff in flight. How many of you saw the Popular Science magazine in March of this year on the front cover? On the front cover of that was the Aurora, the pumpkin seed, and all the other spacecraft that were built. There's 20 Auroras in flight right now, each costing about $1 billion apiece, and they cost $1 million per flight. And I was talking about the Aurora 10 years ago, people, when they closed down the SR-71. So all that technology is very important to understand because, number one, we are in space. We do have bases on the moon. And there's a giant cover-up program that's going on, and those that find out are going to be finding out are basically being severely attacked. And how are they attacked? They're attacked through negative science. Back in the 50s, when the government made a deal with the negative extraterrestrials from Theta Reticuli 3, called the Greys, the government allowed for people to be abducted and implanted and studied, and as you know about the cattle mutilations in this area, there's been tons of them, and sheep mutilations, and one or two human mutilations not far away from here. This was okay. I mean, this was supposedly not going to be okay, but it was okay in trade-off for technology. This technology trade-off went into Vietnam, into warfare against the nerves with Agent Orange. It went into psychological warfare with napalm gas. It was extended down into Nicaragua. The ELF equipment was launched. Currently in
you gotta remember, right now, I did this show.
Destroys human psychology.
Well, I did this show. I met Los Alamos right at the gate, and there were several government people in attendance. It was a very large audience, and we had a lot of government people there, which made it even more interesting. They were right in their backyard doing this talk.
And this was written very well and very strong,
as they say, in the belly of the beast.
When the administration of Reagan back in 1981 admitted to the EIR review, which is Executive Intelligence Review in Washington, D.C., which you can get on a monthly basis, and they blatantly admitted that they were going to try to depopulate the world by 1 billion people by the year 2000. And so these different manners of which depopulation policies go bring into an interesting thing. The first thing they are attacking currently right now is the food chain. I mean, any of you that go down and buy homogenized milk that says vitamin A and D on it is participating in that attack because it's totally not good for you. Totally destroys the hormonal system in the body over a period of time. The ELF, how many of you know what ELF is? Well, those of you that don't, extremely low frequency goes to work on the endocrine system, and I'll do a real fast drawing on the board, which I can cover in my workshop later so you get a little taste of what I'm talking about. ELF is not transmitted through the air. ELF is transmitted through the third wire or the ground socket on your 110-volt receptacle. And it's generated down in one of the American ELF generators is currently operating down in Australia in a giant shaft that goes 6 miles into the ground because the energy is shoved down into the Teutonic plates of the planet and sent upwards through all the electrical grounds for all the generators that generate electricity worldwide. The extermination program now exists in all the free world countries. So because of that, the Pleiadians came back in 1971 to me and also in 75 to Billy Meyer and a few other people, different ones from the Pleiades, different content type people, and they began to teach us science and how the human body works. And they taught us the science that I had I have a PhD in homeopathic medicine, which is a basic background to begin to really understand the science of the human body. Because the attacks are not only biochemical, the attacks on our bodies are also etheric, astral, and mental. And they can work way up into the mental planes with different consciousness attacks. Human beings, depending on their consciousness, have different frequencies of immune systems. People that are highly cued have highly tuned immune systems that have certain weaknesses, for example, in their personality will be affected by things like nitrates and hot dogs and things like that, so they manifest cancer right away. This is easy to tune. So you can tune in to an area where they try to claim that these studies with these water pollutions and that they don't understand where it's coming from cancer. They totally understand it, and a lot of times it's seeded. So it becomes necessary to build your body up so strong to generate your own power within your body to overcome And the idea of that is building a supercharged aura field by changing the nervous structure of the body around, realigning the endocrine system, and causing the brain to generate a huge amount of radiation rather than become receptive to radiation. There's so much radiation on this planet right now that if a woman was pregnant and carrying breast milk, and she were eating normal dairy products that you would buy in an over-the-counter dairy, and she were to cross the state line, she could be arrested by the FDA for carrying radioactive milk across the state line. That's how much radiation there is in dairy products. Okay? So this is why we got into extraterrestrial science. Extraterrestrial science teaches us not only about our body system and our consciousness, it also teaches us about where we are in space and time. The thing that the secret government doesn't quite understand is that in space and time, we're affected by different things. Number one, the first thing that's affecting us is the moon. The moon goes around the Earth every 30 days. In the process of the moon orbiting the Earth, we end up getting water pressure changes on our body, which is causing hormonal changes in our brain and body. And one of the main hormones that changes is serotonin, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with. During the full moon period, which is 2 weeks of the month, which we're just ending now, going into a new moon phase, serotonin production is high, and people that cannot deal with high serotonin production become psychotic, and the criminal acts go up. Turkey has been a country that was aware of this 1,000 years ago, and they established laws that gave leniency to crime offenders during the full moon period. The second, also during the moon period, we have three different cycles. We have the 33-day cycle, we have a 28-day cycle, and a 30-day cycle. Each one affects the physical, emotional, and astral bodies. They're circadian rhythm cycles. In each human, this cycle affects the consciousness in a different way. So it becomes very important over a period of time to understand what the effects of the moon are during this period of the new moon, full moon period, so you can deal with it in a coherent way. Because if you don't work with your body and the lunar aspect of your body, what happens is pressures of society go against you and causes untold stress, which causes a lot of damage that you don't need. Then we have a larger cycle, which is a cycle of the Earth and the Moon rotating around the Sun, which is every 365 1/4 days. And during this time, we have an oscillation in the core of the Earth, which causes us to go into one energy during the wintertime in the northern hemisphere, where the plants recognize it. They put the sap down in the ground. The seeds are preserved during this time. And we go into a kind of a Christ consciousness feeling where we unite with our families in the Christmas time. And as we come into the spring, the energy comes back out of the sap, goes up in the trees, the leaves start to embrace the sun, and we start getting out into the, rather more or less in the relationships and more into the outside environment, and we have that cycle. Then we have another cycle, which takes every 25,827.5 years. This is a cycle whereby our whole solar system rotates around the Pleiades, central sun, Alcyone, and the Pleiades. During this time, we have 2,000-year periods of which the emotional mood of the incarnating soul changes, meaning that in the last 2,000 years, which was the Piscean Age, the integrity of the soul was that I believe. The believing soul structured thousands of different religions to structure their belief systems on. Now that we're moving into what's known as the Aquarian Age is preparing us for the next age where we actually become on the astral plane. And the level or the integrity of the soul is I know. I don't need a church or a Global 2000 report or a, you know, environmental impact report to know what the Earth is headed for, the human race is headed for. So during this time, the level of integrity of the incarnating soul will oftentimes be of one who is free of this whole karmic cycle, this rebirth cycle of this solar system. And these become known as walk-ins or extraterrestrial entities and all the different kinds of phenomena that you're hearing about in the New Age terminology. So the Pleiadians have, well in the future and well in the past now, educated us into how to deal with this period of time. And this period of time, the Pleiadians have started to back up their support of the Earth now, because they cannot directly intervene in the terrestrial events. Because if they were to intervene, what would happen is that the karmic backlash of the human events would go back into their aura field, and they would carry that back to their home worlds, and they would start having wars to get in their own world. So they can only appeal to man's emotional body. This is why, how many of you are familiar with the Meyer case here? Okay, this is why, for example, that Sannyasi could only expose herself to Billy and a few of the closer people in the Meyer camp, and the same in my camp. From time to time, I was allowed to take witnesses out for spaceship or aerial demonstrations or performances for a certain amount of credibility within my own ranks, and that was all we were allowed to do. Now what's happening, we have a new group that's coming that's much more powerful, and they overshadow even the Pleiadians, and they're called the Andromedans. And with them, they bring what we call the holographic science, the science of instantaneous karmic change with no past, present, or future. They're totally centered in the now. So that becomes another form of science that we're also leading into. But that science, we're not teaching it to too many people unless they have gone through the educations of the Pleiadian science. And I imagine for you guys here in this room, probably haven't even gotten much into Pleiadian science. So now I've got about 15 minutes to explain a little bit of the basics of the human body. This is all on tape, by the way. So I know because I'm going a little fast, but I just wanted to... First thing we have to learn is the body is 5% mineral. This 5% mineral works through three different nervous systems in the body. The autonomic, which is the one that you don't think about to make your heart beat and your lungs work. The sympathetic, which is where your feelings of hot and cold and emotion come from. And the parasympathetic, which is the psychic area of the body. The psychic area of the body is the one that the Greys like to play with the most. And they like to play also with the sympathetic. Because humans typically don't have control over the transition period up to the physical to the astral plane. Meaning that when you go to sleep at night, when you're going from what we call a cleansing sleep, where you're in a deep kind of a stupor, into what's called rapid eye movement sleep, where your eyes start twitching, your body and your soul kind of opens up to a sensitive point, and you can be easily hypnotized remotely from there, and this is what happens, especially to women, and then they're abducted out of their body, or their body's even removed, they're not aware of it, a lot of them are impregnated, taken up, for a little while impregnated, put back on the earth, and even have children for about 3 months. They get about 3 months pregnant, and then they're removed again, and the soul, the fetus is removed. The woman is back down on the planet again. She had some kind of a strange nightmarish dream. She missed her period a couple times, but she's not pregnant. This kind of phenomenon you'll see more and more in females all over the world. This is just some of the things that happens in that transition period. What we do is we formulated special minerals and vitamins, especially trace minerals, a very powerful formula to enhance the effect of the parasympathetic nervous network and help people ground that out because it's not grounded in most people. When you have an experience like that, how many of you in here had some strange dreams so far, maybe an experience with the Greys? Any of you in here? Do you know of one? Yeah, two. Don't be afraid to raise your hand. A lot of what also takes place is implanting, small implants. Approximately, according to the statistics I've gotten from the government right now, about 300,000 Americans are implanted with little small transmitters, either in the base of their brain, up in the nose, or wherever in the body. The mineral formulas that we've been able to manufacture and come up with and design with the help of the Pleiadians helps dissolve these implants out of the body. The next phase of the body is the enzymes. The enzymes are very important. It deals with the hydrogen atom, which I don't have time to go into now. But basically, the hydrogen atom is very alive, and it brings down seven different energies from seven levels of consciousness. And these seven levels of energy work through the biochemistry in the body, balancing what's called the potential hydrogen or pH factor. So it's very important to understand that, which I can't get into now, but just realize that the hydrogen atom has a lot to do with the assimilation of any biochemical thing that you put in your body. And one person, for example, could put vitamin C in and get a positive result. Another person could put the same vitamin C in their body and get a negative result because their body wasn't set up to receive the C, or the emotional status of the body wasn't proper to process what the vitamin C could deliver on an enzyme level. Then we go from enzymes to vitamins. Vitamins are the first unit of biochemistry that contain light. There's seven frequencies of light. There's about 20 different kinds of vitamins known to man. And these different vitamins, depending on which part of the body they're going into, deliver these seven frequencies of light. So once you understand the relationship between light delivery and vitamins, your nutrition will probably change. Because of that, we formulated a lot of different vitamins, and our formulas constantly change every 2 years. One example is of our formulations that we do is that if you're breathing automobile exhaust, carbon monoxide, after 8 minutes your creative powers are gone, and it takes 24 hours to revitalize what carbon monoxide does to you in 8 minutes. Two amino acids that are destroyed during this time are called lysine and arginine. Lysine and arginine combine in the body producing vasopressin. Vasopressin is a hormone that gives you the feeling of euphoria and creativity. So by putting lysine arginine into our formula, it helps reproduce vasopressin, which negates the effects of carbon monoxide. These kinds of things, carbon monoxide. So this is a whole other area that I go into in my tape series. That alone, nutrition, is probably a 6-hour part of it, you know, to understand it on that level. From vitamins, then we go up to proteins. With proteins, we go to peptides. Peptides then form hormones. When you get down to the hormone level, the hormone is the first unit of biochemistry to possess consciousness. Okay? You have 7 different sets of hormones in the body. The hormones are stored in the endocrine glands. The endocrine glands. There's 7 different endocrine glands in the body. Each one of these is responsible for a level of consciousness. For example, the sexual glands in the body are for reproductivity. The corticosteroids in the stomach area, the solar plexus area, give you energy. Up in the head, you've got the pituitary and pineal gland. Pineal gland being the master clock of the body, the death hormone, the life hormone, your entire attitude on spirituality. The pituitary gland being the regulatory gland of the entire body for all the rest of them. It's called the master regulator. The endocrine glands are controlled by what we call the chakras. And the chakras respond to different energy fields. Sound, light, color, planetary energies, stellar energies, gemstone energies, pure gems, all these different things, minerals. These different vibratory frequencies affect the endocrine glands, which then affect the hormones. When this happens, the hormones are released into the bloodstream, and they go up, and they orchestrate the brain. The brain has 2 types of electrical switches in it that the hormones turn on and turn off. One switch is called the receptor. The receptor, when a hormone arrives on it, closes, creating an electrical flow of electricity down through the central nervous system, creating a positive field. If the hormone is removed, the field collapses. We have another type of synapse or switch in the brain called the effector. It already has a field, and when a hormone comes in, it turns this field off and stops the flow of energy. Coming out of the brain are 72,000 major nerves, which then turn on and turn off in all types of vibratory frequencies, from below sound, which you can't hear, through sound, all the way up into light, all the way up into radiation. The higher the brain wave response, the higher frequency can the aura field go up to. Some people can see auras, some can't. The ones that can have made thoroughbred type of brains within themselves to create an energy field where they become perceptive. Because for the 5 senses, for the ears and the eyes and the nose, and all these different senses to work properly, your body has to generate an internal reference standard to make a comparison from the outside. These are the kinds of things that the Pleiadian science teaches us about. They also have given us some of the nuclear forces within the DNA. In understanding that, it allows us to subject ourselves to tremendous stresses without any negative side effects. And somebody would like to come up here real quick. I'll do a quick test and show you what I'm talking about. Somebody wants to come up for muscle testing. You want to be tested? Okay. Sorry, I have to jump around a little bit here because 30 minutes is like outrageous. You can't even say hello in 30 minutes, so I'm coming to kind of skip around here. What's your name?
Jaren.
Okay, now turn around, face the audience. Okay. You had muscle testing before?
No.
Well, you're about to have it. Now put your arm straight out. We're going to test your strength. Okay, I should make a fist. Okay. Now this tests the electrical response of your body. Now when I push down, you resist. Okay, resist. Okay, you feel your strength now, right? Resisting, all right. Now relax for a second. Now, have you ever breathed glue before?
No.
Oh, you're going to get high?
Would I admit it? No.
Okay, this is, says contains methyl chloride, methyl ethyl ketone, flammable, decomposes people, you know. Okay, that's what we're going to breathe. This is a typical atmosphere outside the door, you know, when you're going down the road. Okay. Now resist. Let's see how your strength is now. Feel the difference? Put it right up to your nose. Get a good whiff. Whoops, there we go. Now hold on a minute now. A little different, huh? Now this little thing is fun. Okay. Put that right over that one there. Okay, now put that back up to your nose. Okay, now. Now resist. Resist. Resist.
Wow.
Well, she gets strong. Get the point.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. That's one of the little devices that helps overcome the effects of glue, you know. Now, some people like to put this on and just breathe the hell out of this, you know. It's cool. Okay, now I've got about 5 minutes here. And just to get to know you guys, I'd like some questions, you know, because in 25 minutes, we've skipped through light years of different things that I've been through. So could I have some questions? Is there any? Yeah, go ahead.
Question, Dr. Fred Bell. I don't know what question is it. They cut me right off. These guys, this is what happens when you're out there working in the field. You got a great audience, and you got some real jerks running the tape system. And these guys probably worked for the government, did not like a word of what I said, and couldn't wait to get rid of me, but I was there in their face up close and personal for a whole weekend. So I'm sure they weren't having the best night's sleep after I left. But anyhow, that's another story. That's just how these things are these days. Now I'm going to ask Wes to continue on taking us out. I hope he'll do that. You never know what he's going to do. Well, there he is. I think he's coming. Oh, there's Wes Montgomery. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Like I say, if I don't do this over again tonight, I think I won't. This one recorded okay. And, we'll see you on Saturday night soon. We're going to continue on with the series. This Pleiadian stuff is very interesting. I love hearing it again. Maybe I'll even find that Renticulan sound shift. That was really amazing. I recorded that right down the street. So, until next Tuesday or whenever, happy hunting out there in the chemtrail world. Thanks, Wes. Come back and see us again sometime. I love your music style.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.